You know, the subject of ancient aliens just fascinates me. Past visitations. Up next, Giorgio Tsoukalos joins us as we talk about just that and more on Coast to Coast AM. Well, I'm going to introduce you to what could be the real-life Indiana Jones, Giorgio Tsoukalos. He's a trailblazer, changing the way the world thinks about the ancient astronaut theory. Now, for more than 12 years, Giorgio has been the director of Eric von Däniken's Center for Ancient Astronaut Research. He is the publisher of the legendary Times magazine, the world's only and definitive ancient astronaut research journal. Giorgio has traveled the world extensively, and today is one of the few people who have actually visited and explored nearly all the mysterious places our planet has to offer. Full show right now with Giorgio Tsoukalos. Giorgio, how are you again?
Very well. Thank you very much, George. I'm glad to be back on the show.
Always a pleasure to have you. What have you been doing lately?
Well, I've actually been very, very busy. I consider myself very blessed. And as you know, but I would like to share this with our listeners, back in 2009, I was consulting producer of a little television show called Ancient Aliens.
Little, I have had more response to that little television show, Giorgio.
It's a bit of an understatement, isn't it?
You did a great job on that.
But we are, in fact, currently filming Ancient Aliens, the series. And we just filmed you a few weeks ago. And we're in the process of putting everything together. We're almost in post-production. And the show will air on the History Channel, 5 episodes, starting this April. So anyone that's listening, please tune in to the History Channel in April. It's called Ancient Aliens, the series, and in most likelihood it will be aired on Saturday nights.
So obviously,
now you finally have something to do on Saturday.
Obviously, the History Channel liked what you did on that first show.
Well, it was, you know, the idea was always to sort of write a love letter to Chariots of the Gods, which was Eric's seminal work back in 1970. And, you know, I mean, you've seen the program, and I'm sure many, many of Coast to Coast listeners have watched the program as well. And this was truly one of the first programs ever that put the ancient astronaut theory in a positive light and you know, presented in a way that it's downright conceivable that, you know, we're aware ourselves that most of the stuff we talk about sounds completely off the wall. But if you look at it from a, you know, scientific perspective, then after a while, after digging through the surface, you have to come to the conclusion that, yes, something happened in our remote past. And of course, in the ancient astronaut theory, it means that Earth has been visited by extraterrestrials in the remote past.
Yeah, I had an opportunity, Giorgio, to talk with Eric von Däniken on the program several months ago.
Wonderful. And he told me about it.
He has as much energy now as he had when his Chariot of the Gods book came out decades ago.
And he's 75 years old. He's 75 years old right now, and he is writing book number 31. And Career Press just announced that his latest book, Twilight of the Gods, will be published here in the United States in July of this year. So all very exciting. I mean, History is Wrong was his last book that he published in English. That book did really well. But, you know, someone who has already read his book, Twilight of the Gods, which is called Götterdämmerung in German, someone who's already read that, like me, I can tell you it blows most all of his books out of the water because it's absolutely ironclad and, you know, it's very, very well researched and just magnificent. So everyone should just look forward to it. It's going to be amazing.
We're going to give people one ride tonight. But before we get into this journey, tell me a little bit more about you, Giorgio, how you got interested in the ancient astronaut theory, how you and Eric got together, where you and I are the director of the Center for Ancient Astronaut Research, how that all happened for you?
Well, that actually, you know, the interest in the, you know, the alternative history of mankind has basically been instilled on me since I was a child growing up in my home because especially my grandma, she was very much tuned in into all these subjects. And, for example, I've had the privilege to travel all around the world with my parents, who were avid travelers, and they made sure that we would go to all the museums and all the archaeological sites, you know, just as a real life education on site, this and that. But whenever I would come home, my grandma would say, "Look, now you've learned these particular mainstream ideas of this site and that site, but let me show you something else." And so she would read to me, books by Eric or books by anyone, the unsolved mysteries of the world. So that type of discussion at my home was dinner table stuff. And especially also my mom, she's always said, and I never quite understood as a little child what she meant by this, but of course, as you grow older, you change, your brain grows, and you understand what she meant. And what she basically said was that everything that exists today, like technology-wise, she always said that she thinks that all of this has already existed before at some point in time. And I never knew what she meant. And today we laugh about it because, both of my parents are, they're doctors and all this. And so I'm the only non-doctor, non-attorney, non-engineer, non-whatever in my entire family.
But you're having fun.
I'm having a lot of fun. But I'm always saying to my parents, I'm saying, look, it's your fault. You talked to me about this when I grew up.
That's
so,
right.
Just don't say anything.
my mother did the same thing to me. My father wanted me to become a dentist. She would bring me books that Walter Sullivan, the late New York Times science writer, wrote called We Are Not Alone. She'd pull out Look magazine when they had the Benny and Barney Hill Interrupted Journey story. So, she got me into all this, too. And I told her just a few weeks ago, I said, Mom, you're the reason I'm doing what I'm doing today. Dad wanted me to be a dentist.
And this is why, after all, we can definitely be grateful to our parents and our grandparents, because we're definitely a product of the environment that we grew up in. And, we're testament to this.
Well, and I've made them both happy, Giorgio. One, I'm doing this program, which she adores. Two, I go to the dentist twice a year for my dad. Everybody wins, right?
Exactly.
Tell me a little bit about the stories of creation, because that's important to get into everything we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, and that is really a great question to start off with, because here's the very interesting idea or concept of the ancient astronaut theory, and it basically suggests that a long, long time ago, extraterrestrials visited the Earth in the remote past. And so it doesn't matter what ancient culture you look at, all of those cultures have what's considered a creation story. And what's really interesting, regardless if the story comes from the east, from the west, from the north, or from the south, all creation stories at their core are literally identical, because what you have there is that everything starts in complete darkness. And out of this complete darkness, or sometimes also referred to as the chaos or the deep dark void, a type of egg or a cosmic egg emerges from far, far away. Sometimes the egg is referred to as being silver in color. Sometimes it's referred to as being golden in color. And that egg then descends onto Earth. And when the egg then cracks open and there is this bright light that emanates from it, and from there all creation begins. Now, not all these eggs crack open. Sometimes a heavenly ladder descends or is lowered from these cosmic eggs, out of which these heavenly teachers descend and teach mankind in all sorts of different disciplines. Now, we all know that cosmic eggs in that sense do not exist. So the question that I ask is, well, what did our ancestors mean when they talked about these cosmic eggs? And, so we have references to cosmic eggs. We also have references to cosmic pearls, cosmic turtles, mm-hmm. cosmic snakes, winged snakes, flying shields, and flaming shields. So, and if you look at it from a very rudimentary point of view, all those shapes are pretty much identical or similar. I mean, a turtle can be compared to an egg. So what is it that our ancestors tried to describe or circumscribe what they saw or witnessed or what their ancestors witnessed so that it was compelling enough for them to put it in writing or into their traditions? Because at the outset of this program, I would like to state very clearly that our ancestors had the same brains that we have today, which means they were as intelligent as we are today. The only difference is that their technological frame of reference was different than what we have today. So therein lies the difference. Our ancestors were not stupid. On the contrary, they were as smart as we are today. However, when they got in contact with flesh and blood extraterrestrials, they did not comprehend the nuts and bolts aspects behind those visits and thus turn it into something spiritual, something divine, right, something magical. Even though, by the way, you know, I mean, I do not deny the spiritual world or the divine. Of course not. I am a deep believer in God. Of course, then the question is, you know, what is your idea of God? I mean, it's certainly not anything out of the Old Testament, for example. But so that's a whole other discussion.
That's another show.
Yeah, so there we have all these different creation stories that in and of itself are identical. And when, you know, scientists, mainstream scientists come along and say, well, you know, all of this is just fantasy, it's all just invented stories, you know, that to me is an insult in the face of our ancestors.
Well, I agree with you, Giorgio, because let's say 50 years ago, if you put an iPhone in front of somebody 50 years ago, they would have no idea what it was.
Exactly.
But they would try to describe it the best way they could, and they'd come up with something, and that if people looked back 50 years from then, right around now, let's say, and we read that description, we'd say, boy, that's pretty weird, you know, how they tried to come up with it, what they tried to explain.
Absolutely, and that is what is so fascinating, that in biblical times, we actually have references of magical glowing stones with which people were able to see the world and with which people received teachings. What were our ancestors describing? Did magical glowing stones really exist? Or if you place a laptop, or like what you just said, an iPhone in front of someone who has never seen something like this, and, you know, propel yourself back 5,000 years, and you have, you know, you bring a laptop with you, that laptop would become a magical tablet. And then imagine you put a DVD and you play a scene from the Grand Canyon on that. Well, I mean, that is just astonishing to whoever sees this 5,000 years ago. And thus we create a story that later then is relegated into the realm of fantasy, which it never was.
Giorgio, let's talk a little bit about Genesis. And again, here's another episode of what could have been an interpretation of ancients for what they saw. Explain.
Well, of course. I mean, and of course, Genesis, and I'm sure that many of our coast-to-coast listeners are very familiar with this, and that is the fact that if we read Genesis, then there is one particular sentence in there that says, and then God created man in their image. And grammatically speaking, that sentence really doesn't make any sense. And of course, the theologians are saying that, you know, the there in that sentence has to do with the Holy Trinity and all this stuff. But if you look at it from the original perspective, when you look at the word God, then in the original Hebrew, the word for God is Elohim. And Elohim, and any, you know, true scholar, if they were to translate that word correctly into correct English, the word Elohim is a plural form. It means the gods. So then, if you rewrite that sentence, the sentence correctly would have to read, and then the gods created man in their image. So that is one of the basic tenets of the ancient astronaut theory, that a long, long time ago, some flesh and blood extraterrestrials arrived on Earth and saw that sensible, intelligent life, humanoid life, exists here on Earth. And in order to bring us to the next phase of development, they conducted a genetic mutation of our genes and thus created Homo sapiens sapiens. Because one thing is crystal clear, that, you know, the fossil record exists. There is no denial in that. But something happened, because there was a quantum leap when we were literally munching bananas in caves, and then all of a sudden we're building civilization.
Yeah, all of a sudden we're pretty intelligent, aren't
yes.
we?
Yes, and so that is what even Charles Darwin referred to. Look, Charles Darwin in his Origin of Species himself said, I like my theory, and I have to agree with him. You know, a lot of stuff that he wrote in Origin of Species is great. However, even he himself said, but something I can't wrap my mind around, and that is why today we have the infamous missing link. And that missing link is where there is no transitional period between any of the previous humanoid species, none of our human ancestors, that, you know, they all just appeared and disappeared. There is no transitional form. And so the ancient astronaut theory is that particular missing link, which suggests that, you know, everything happened due to a targeted mutation of our genes in the remote past. And the crazy thing is that, you know, the intelligent design people out there who are studying this are, you know, and I mean, we're living in very exciting times right now. The geneticists have translated our human genome, our DNA has been translated.
Sure.
So, you know, both sides, the traditional scientists and the intelligent design people, they are looking at something in genetics, in our human DNA, where something doesn't make sense. And unfortunately, the scientists, they're trying to explain everything away with Darwinism, and the intelligent design people are trying to explain everything away with God. Well, you see, there actually should be a reconciliation of the two, and somewhere in the middle we should meet, and that the missing link, or God, wasn't necessarily God. God, a spiritual entity, who, by the way, does exist, but that it was an extraterrestrial interference of our genes in the remote past. And I think that one day we will find that answer, because it won't be a monument, it won't be a crashed spaceship or something, but I think that the message will be ultimately found in our genes. And to be honest with you, not to be a conspiracy theorist or anything.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm on the right program for this.
Yes.
But what if that knowledge has already been discovered in the lab? Who knows?
That's very possible. Your two websites, legendarytimes.com, legendarytimesbooks.com. We've got you linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Do you travel much when you do this research?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you see, that is one thing that the members and also the researchers of the Center for Ancient Astronaut Research can pride themselves in, that we actually go to the places that we write about, because unfortunately we live in the time of Photoshop.
Absolutely. and you've got to get there. Giorgio, hold on for just a bit. We're going to be right back with you in just a moment. And I want to get into the possibilities of atomic bombs being used in ancient times. This is a fascinating program. Our special guest tonight, Giorgio Tsoukalos, as we talk about the ancient astronaut theory. And there's much more, by the way. We'll talk about Native American Thunderbirds later on Coast to Coast AM. With our special guest tonight, Giorgio Tsoukalos, as we talk about ancient astronauts. Get ready for more on Coast to Coast AM. Giorgio, tell us a little bit about the theory of the possibility of an atomic war, an ancient atomic war.
Yeah, I mean, that is definitely one of the tentpoles of the ancient astronaut theory, because in ancient Indian texts, we have concise references of looked at from a modern perspective would suggest some type of an atomic explosion or atomic explosions, plural, actually. And, you know, the debunkers are saying that all of this is nonsense because in battle there are explosions, big explosions. And, you know, to be honest with you, my reaction to that argument is, okay, these texts are, you know, 4,000 years old. Did they, according to mainstream archaeology, really have explosions back then? And that is that is up for debate. But I'm leaning more towards the idea that no, they didn't. Nothing that was created by man or by humankind, anyhow. However, there are descriptions, and I've actually prepared a quote here from the Mahabharata. And what the debunkers are not looking at is the greater picture, because, you know, they're only fixating on one aspect of the story, and then they're ignoring all the rest. And those descriptions are very detailed. So this is a few lines, so I'm just going to read it, but this is out of the Mahabharata, and it says that he hurled a single projectile charged with all the power of the universe, an incandescent column of smoke and flame as bright as a thousand suns rose in all its splendor. A perpendicular explosion with its billowing smoke clouds, the cloud of smoke rising after its first explosion, formed into expanding round circles. It was an unknown weapon, an iron thunderbolt, a gigantic messenger of death, which reduced to ashes the entire race of the Rishnis and the Andakas. The corpses were so burned as to be unrecognizable.
Amazing.
Their hair and nails fell out. Pottery broke without apparent cause, and the birds turned white. After a few hours, all their food was infected. To escape from this fire, the soldiers threw themselves in streams of water to wash themselves and their equipment. Now, I'm sorry, George, there are multiple references in here that speak directly of something that would have to do with a nuclear blast, because only if you suffer from radiation poisoning or from nuclear fallout do your nails fall out.
How old was that text, Giorgio?
About 2,000 to 3,000 years old, and this is from ancient India.
Jeez.
And you see, and you know, if you read about a pillar of smoke, and you know that the smoke or the explosion formed into expanding round circles, you know, I mean, that is a mushroom cloud, and you know, there are all these other things, like, you know, that the soldiers threw themselves into streams of water to clean themselves. That's what you have to do after you come in contact with any type of radioactivity.
Absolutely. I mean, how clear can it be? It sounds like an obvious description to some kind of atomic attack. Now, who did it exactly and why? That's another story, isn't it?
Of course. But here's the bottom line, though, George, that you and I are crazy, right? Because we're looking at this, and by the mainstream, you know, the theories that we're proposing, even though they're crystal clear, and anyone with a half a brain can recognize this, and to even argue this, you know, the only reason why it's being argued anyway is because, unfortunately, the great majority of mankind, scientists and religionists included, think that we are the pinnacle of creation, that, you know, evolutionary, technological evolution, or even, you know, spiritual evolution or development has experienced a gradual evolution from point A to point B, from point B to point C, from bottom to top, and we are at the pinnacle. We're the greatest, we're the crown of creation, we're absolutely incredible. I mean, all we're doing, we're navel-gazing. We're the best, we're the greatest, we're amazing. Yet, you know, everything is cyclical. That what we're experiencing today is nothing else what's been going on for thousands of years. And, you know, it's an absolute blasphemy to suggest that a technology such as nuclear power or at least atomic bombs existed thousands of years ago. And we have physical evidence for this.
Now, tell me about this giant crater found just outside of Mumbai in India.
Right. I mean, I'm glad you bring that up because, you know, that is basically, you know, it's called the Lonar Crater, which is located 400 kilometers northeast of Mumbai. And it's dated less than 50,000 years old. And it's this nearly circular 2,100 meter diameter crater.
It's so huge.
It's huge, almost perfect.
And no remnants of an asteroid?
Nothing. No. And that is exactly what I was getting at, because the only way, and see, at the center of this structure or of this crater, we have these basalt glass spheres that could have only been created if that area had been exposed to high degrees of heat. And no volcanoes in the area, by the way.
No.
And no meteorite. So, I mean, you know, nature can do amazing things. But at the same time, you know, sometimes you also have to go with logic. And if nature by herself cannot create something like this, well, then there's only one solution to this, and that is some type of an outside force besides nature created this, or, you know, had the effect of creating something like this.
Now, I'm going to ask you to speculate, because that's what this is, but I'm just curious to get your take, because I'm sure you've tried to think, what happened? What went, what occurred? Why was there a battle?
Well, I mean, you see, here is the thing that, you know, I sort of disagree with in the whole alternative history field. And that is, you know, a lot of people, you know, especially UFO people, they're always not, and of course I'm generalizing, George, I'm not saying that everyone is like this, but in general, everyone says that the moment that, you know, extraterrestrials show up in their UFOs, all of our problems will be solved. Everything will be great. We'll have, you know, free energy, this and that. Now, while I think that that is possible, I am more of the conviction that, you know, how we have problems on this planet, there are problems out there. It's not all perfect out there. It's just a bigger version of everything that's going on here. There's good, and then there's evil. You know, everything, you know, good and evil penetrates or you know, encompasses the entire universe. And I'm also a believer that in the end, good outweighs the bad. However, so if we have those ancient texts where these battles are described, in my opinion, and, you know, in Zechariah Sitchin's opinion, Eric von Däniken, and all other sorts of ancient astronaut theorists, is that those extraterrestrials who came here, there is a possibility that they crash-landed. And so there were some types of mutinies going on where all of a sudden some people of the crew did no longer agreed with the commander, and so they start to have these factions and these battles started. And we have very concise references for this. I mean, one example, for example, is Lucifer. I mean, Lucifer was a part of quote-unquote God's crew, and I'm not saying that God was an extraterrestrial. But I am suggesting that whoever or whatever was described in the Old Testament Bible was not God in that sense, but a misunderstood flesh and blood extraterrestrial. And so those ancient texts that describe these battles are between these quote-unquote gods that are fighting between each other. And just to be clear, whenever I say gods, and I know you agree with me on that one, it's always lowercase g.
Yes, sir.
It has nothing to do with, you know, capital G God. And so, you know, it is amazing that in ancient India, especially now that we're talking about these atomic explosions, were you aware that whenever these weapons of this incredible force, whenever they were deployed, they were always hurled from these flying machines called Vimanas? And we have these concise descriptions of flying chariots in ancient Indian texts that were piloted by the gods. And still today, in the Hindi language, the word Viman means airplane. So we have a surviving mythology in language that has survived to this day.
Absolutely. Now, there's a British researcher. His name, of Indian origin, David Davenport. Mm-hmm. He spent at least 12 years studying ancient Hindu scripts, and he concludes that there was this atomic explosion 4,000 years ago.
Yeah. Well, that's a very interesting point here. In 1975, David Davenport published a book in India. He lived in India, but he published a book in Italy, and the title was 2000 Anticristo Distruzione Atomica, which in English means atomic destruction in 2000 BC. And in that book, Davenport claimed to have proof that Mohenjo-Daro, one of the oldest cities in the world of human civilization, had been destroyed by an atomic bomb. And what he basically proposed was that, and he basically just addressed mainstream archaeologists, because at Mohenjo-Daro we have thousands of these glassy lumps, which are called the black stones, and they turn out to be fragments of clay vessels which had melted into each other in some type of an extreme heat. And that extreme heat, he proposes, was about 2,000 degrees centigrade, which is about 3,600 degrees Fahrenheit. And when they got down to the levels of the skeletons of the people that died right there at Mohenjo-Daro, all of those people just lied there, unburied, hand in hand sometimes.
Like Nagasaki, like Hiroshima.
See, this is why I love talking to you, George. Exactly. And in fact, one Soviet professor, or Russian, sorry about that, one Russian scholar back in the day when it was still the Soviet Union, actually did research there, and they determined that one of the skeletons had a radiation level 50 times greater than normal. Now, this is all very wild stuff, and nobody talks about it.
This is incredible, truly incredible work. Is he still alive, do you know?
That, unfortunately, I'm not aware. I don't know. I don't know.
He would be a great one for your History Channel shows.
Yeah, absolutely.
If he's still out there. We'll do some checking, both of us will.
Wonderful.
There's another expert out there by the name of William Sturm, and I think he is still alive. He has said that the melting bricks at this town you just mentioned, mm-hmm. How do you pronounce that?
Mohenjo-Daro.
Mohenjo-Daro. Could not have been caused. The melting bricks, he said, could not have been caused by a normal fire.
No, and Mohenjo-Daro is not the only place. We have also in Saudi Arabia, we have a site that has these spherules. We have that in the Sinai Peninsula. I mean, today's Israel, so can you say Sodom and Gomorrah? I mean, there we have
Perfect.
A biblical
Great.
Story that possibly describes some type of a atomic bomb that went off that, made Lot's wife turn into a pillar of salt. I mean, again, those stories, of course, are stories. They're legends. But what I'm after is the core. What compelled our ancestors to put this in writing, or at least put in their oral traditions? Because they most certainly did not just sit around a campfire and, you know, got drunk or were smoking dope, and then all of a sudden they were like, all right, well, what should we come up with tonight? No. What they wrote down and what they put in their oral traditions, it was their history. Just like today, we put stuff in the newspaper that really is going on. And to suggest that everything our ancestors, you know, wrote down on paper is nothing but fantasy, you know, who is insulting whom here? The mainstream scientists are insulting me and are saying that Eric and I and Zachariah Sitchin, that we are insulting our ancestors. But are we really? I don't think so, because the mainstream scientists are saying, in fact, that everything that we read in ancient times, oh, we have to take it with a grain of salt because our ancestors just didn't get it. So everything was just divine, and everything had to do with the gods, and they did not exist. And it was just a way of coming to grips with the world. Now, that to me, that is the slap in our ancestors' face.
And you've heard the stories of, in the deserts,
yes,
of the Middle East, they see glass
of
deep
course.
Down, as if it was created by some kind of atomic explosion.
And that is what I'm actually referring to about Saudi Arabia.
Exactly,
uh-huh. Yes. So, and none of that stuff could happen by the sunlight alone, because, you know, both you and I have been in the desert. It's incredibly hot. I mean, it's crazy. You just want to lay down and sleep. I mean, it is very hot.
It's hot, but you're not going to make glass.
Exactly. And again, you know, in the desert, you don't necessarily have volcanic activity. So the only way that could have been possible is it was some type of a blast, or at least some technology that has been lost ever since.
Well, Michael Cremo, in his Forbidden Archaeology, talks about humankind being millions and millions of years old. And who knows what kind of technology we could have had. Though I think, Giorgio, you and I subscribe to the ancient astronaut theory. It is possible that we had intelligence on this planet that was humankind, and they blew themselves up as well.
Like we're about to?
Like we could.
Well, I don't mean to
sound
that. That
was kind of scary the way you said that.
Well, you know, I mean, look, I'm always a guy that says that the glass is half full instead of half empty. But, you know, there are so many bizarre thinking people out there right now who unfortunately believe strongly. And I mean the word believe, not that they know. They believe in it. There's faith involved about the end times. And that really concerns me, because there's people in power who believe in the end times. And I think that's very disconcerting because, you know, for example, the Maya never said that the world will end in 2012. They never said that.
Never.
So we should just get away from that. The world will go on. Everything will be fine because, you know, this is not the end. So we should get away from this doom and gloom idea of 2012.
Giorgio, when we come back, I want to talk with you about your latest work of ancient dragon myths and China folklore and Native American thunderbirds as well. Plus, go up to the coasttocoastam.com website. Giorgio has sent us a few images I want you to look at before we talk about it next hour on Coast to Coast AM.